Just testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. I'm under the cosh.
All right, welcome everyone to this special episode of the Koshcast. We've travelled to Ottawa today to meet Bruce Grobbelaar, Liverpool legend, Zimbabwe international, European Cup winner, league title winner on multiple occasions. Bruce, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much indeed. And anybody who's listening, watch out, it's under the cosh.
We're going to start, with what you're doing here in Ottawa. So Bernie, why don't we start there?
Awesome, Bruce. Thanks again for meeting us here. So I just wanted to ask you, what brought you to Canada? It's pretty cold and I'm confused, so...
Yeah, a lot of people have actually asked me what I'm doing in Canada. After taking five teams in Africa, managing five teams in South Africa, professional football, I decided that I wanted to go back to UK, where I went with my girlfriend at the time. She was working over there and I was working at Liverpool. And we decided that she wanted a family. So we looked around the world to the best part of the world to bring up a child. Mm-hmm. And we looked in Australia, New Zealand, the Middle East, Singapore, Dubai, some parts of America, the Caribbean, Canada. And we opted for Canada because I was given my first chance in professional football with Vancouver Whitecaps. Mm-hmm. So we got an opportunity in Newfoundland to go to Newfoundland, and my wife got a job there, and I got a little job there taking the junior football on the western side of Newfoundland, which I did for about 2 months until I got a phone call from Marc Dos Santos here in Ottawa.
Okay. And you decided that, you know, it is pretty cold up here in Ottawa, but I can make this work, and now you're a goalkeeping coach, right? Working with the youth in the area, or how does it really work in terms of recruiting?
Well, it's quite funny because I got a phone call from just a random phone call one day in Newfoundland, and I picked up the phone, and Marc Dos Santos said, "Hello, my name is Marc Dos Santos. I'm the Ottawa Fury head coach. I was given your name by Nick Dasevich." And he said that you know something about goalkeeping. I said, yeah, a little bit. And he said, what are you doing in Newfoundland? I said, well, I'm just taking over the junior program and I'm looking after that I've been looking after that for 2 months. And he said, well, our goalkeeping coach is gone. Would you like to come to Ottawa just to see how it is? And have you had any experience in professional football?
Really?
I said a little bit.
You must have had fun with this.
Yeah. He said, okay, have you got a CV? I said, I'll send it through straight away.
It's on YouTube.
So I said, fine. He said, when I've read your CV, then I'll contact you. So he put down the phone. That's about it. And about an hour later, subsequently, he's told me the story. He went back into the dressing room and he asked his brother, and Martin Nash, his assistant, he said, do any of you know Bruce Grobbelaar? No, he didn't have Bruce Grobbelaar. He said, anybody know Bruce, who's a goalkeeper? So they looked at each other and they said, oh, there's only one Bruce Grobbelaar. He said, well, what's he doing in Newfoundland?
Right.
So when the CV came through, he rings me up. And he said, Bruce, I'm very, very sorry. So I said, listen, Mark, it doesn't matter. If you've got someone else that, you know, you're giving the job to, it's no problem. He says, no, I'm sorry. I didn't know who I was talking to. That's it. I came here, and after 2 weeks, he said, you got a four-month contract or 16 months? So I said, give me 16. So that's why I'm here.
Awesome. Yes. And so how do you see the football climate in let's start with Ottawa, the football climate here, because we know in Toronto it's grown over the last 7 years that we've been here with Toronto FC and all that. What's it like as a football city, Ottawa?
It's very, very difficult, Ottawa as a football city. If you have a look at what they've had in the past, it's just the regional teams. and the regional teams were okay. They thought they were good. And then the OSEC, under the umbrella of OSEC, they got in the Red Blacks, brought the Red Blacks back. And the stadium here, Lansdowne, is now the TD Place, which they've built. They've got the 67s, and one of the chaps said, well, what about my football team, which is Ottawa? So they said, yeah, bring them in as well. So we are under the OSEC banner. And last year was the very first year of this team, you know, into the league, mm-hmm. in North American Soccer League. And we ended up second, 8th out of 10. So we didn't end up last, you know, right. Which was great. This year there's 11 teams, so it's gradually growing. Jacksonville have come in, and what we have seen that from getting a team together, what the management and the coaches, they got a team together, but it's like baby steps. You know, you think that you got the right players, and in the first year you know that you haven't. So
right.
we've got rid of some, and we've brought quite a lot of better players, better quality into the squad.
Speaking of the right players, and if I'm wrong, correct me, but I believe you're quoted as saying that you have a young goalkeeper who's better than Mignolet?
Yes.
Okay.
Are there a lot of people who are not?
No. Listen, I made that comment in November, and I stood by it until the turn of the year. From the turn of the year until now, I think that Mignolet has actually grown in stature, and he has is turning out to be one of the best goalkeepers in the league.
Mm.
Because the last 10 games or the last 12 games, you know, they've won or drawn, and he's had four or five clean sheets. So
right.
He is second in the league for clean sheets to Ben Forster from Southampton. And I can't see that Forster leading that at the end of the season, that's
mm-hmm.
for sure. And Mignolet will have a chance. He's grown in stature because he has now learnt to adapt and command mm-hmm. his area. When I said that to them in the UK about I've got a goalkeeper that's better than him, I still say that I've got a goalkeeper here, Marcel Debellis, who's a Canadian, who is better than Mignolet. And I still go by that now.
So on that subject, and that to stay on the Fury, does that give you encouragement on the development of players within Canada now, as opposed to a couple of years ago? Or what do you think the level is now?
In Canada, the level in Canada has grown. But if you have a look at the Canadian players playing in the Canadian League, there isn't a Canadian League, is there?
No.
There's just regional.
Right.
So if you pick up some regional players and you try and put them into a squad to represent Canada, you'll find that they'll be dislodged from what they should be doing. The players that Benito Flores has got in the national squad all play away, like in Europe, in America, North America, MLS. So it's hard for him to actually pick out the best players because he hasn't seen the best players regionally.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen Benito Flores go to any part of the country to pick out talent. And where we have, and that's why we had Marcel Debellis.
Yes.
Marcel Debellis has had a little bit of experience in Italy, in the Serie B. So we know his pedigree, and that was at a very young age. He's 20, 23, 24 now, and I feel that he should be in the national squad.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that all the time because I think that he needs a chance and a break. Unfortunately, we've got a Romuald Paiser, who is a very experienced goalkeeper from Europe.
So as far as now we see Toronto FC, Vancouver Whitecaps, Montreal Impact, and a lot of them now, I know with Toronto FC, they have TFC2 now, and they have the academy. Do you see them coming to scout your players, bring them up, and take them away from you? Does that happen at all?
You must also understand that Edmonton is in that fold as well, because mm-hmm. they're in the NSL. So
they're your rivals.
Yes, they are big rivals. We're going to be playing them against them in the Amway Cup. We've got the two-legged affair.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at the five teams that are representing the MLS and the North American Soccer League, we've got a bunch of players, but if you have a look at the MLS Canadian sides, they don't develop any Canadians.
No.
They are developing Americans.
Mm-hmm.
American players.
So they bring Americans over into the academies.
Into the academies, and that's where the second teams of those teams, the second tier of the team, the ones that are going to be playing in the USL Pro, those are the ones who are going to be Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very hard, and it'll be hard for the USL Pro youngsters to break into the Vancouver,
Montreal
or Toronto. With the North American Soccer League, Edmonton and ourselves, you will find that we are producing and we will be developing Canadians into the squad. We have got an academy here at the Ottawa Fury. We play in the men's league, but our players are only 17, 18. So we're pitching their skills against men.
Right.
Our under-18s are only 15 and 16. And they're playing in the under-18 league.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we are developing our players.
Okay.
If there is a player that is of age, about 19, and he's very exceptionally good, then we'll put him in the squad. And what happens with us, Marcel de Bellis will get his games playing in this team against men. And our league is the Quebec League. We don't play in the Ottawa League. We play in the Quebec League, which is a semi-pro league anyway.
Canada's not too far, so you're still...
Yeah. That's where we are.
Yeah. One more question on your Canadian experience. You know, we see Jason DeVos, Craig Forrest, those guys on Sportsnet. And do you think... You know, what do you think of the state of punditry in Canada? Because, I mean, it's an important facet of the game. So when will you get into that at some point as well? Yeah.
Remains to be seen, but I'd leave it to the experts at the moment.
Very, very well put. Well, on the subject of player development, have they asked you to bring some expertise over from England or your days as a goalkeeper into the Canadian system to sort of boost the development?
Mark DeSantos came in and asked me that when he signed me up to come to Ottawa, he said this in... can you work with my brother, who's the head of the academy? And I said, there's no problem at all. So I go to the academy and I give them their routines in goalkeeping. And so they take that through from the academy and right through to the first team.
Any notable characteristics of training that stand out?
A lot of the previous coaches have taught these goalkeepers to punch, where if you can catch a ball, you've got the ball.
You don't see that often enough. Yeah.
I don't see it often enough now.
No.
But there's a lot of coaches that get them to palm the ball away instead of gathering it and soft hands at times.
Well, the balls are also, I mean, you always hear that it's a characteristic of how the balls act right now in flight as well. It just makes it harder for keepers.
Yeah, but you see, the thing is, there was an old adage when David James was the England goalkeeper, and he was complaining that the Jabulani ball was moving.
Yep, yeah.
And when I interviewed him in 2010 at the World Cup, I said, David, does the ball move Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday? He said, yes. I said, well, it's the same ball that moves on a Saturday. And you're catching that ball on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday.
Right.
Why can't you catch it on the weekend?
Right.
And he looked at me and went, okay.
Thank you.
He's not going to argue with you.
There's a conception that that punching is a foreign coaching method. And that goalkeepers in England are taught to catch the ball. Does that align with your experience? Or?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. If you look at the European way of coaching, yes, it's getting the ball away as far as you can with a punch or the flat palm. But in the UK, we were taught get a hold of the ball when you can, and that's how I teach my goalkeepers. All the exercises on the floor, gathering, it's getting a soft hand and gathering it toward you. And I say to our goalkeepers when we're in training, anybody who drops a ball, you give me 5 pesos. So they have a little competition on them, with themselves.
Right.
So anything that they miss out, they do their five pesos.
Fair enough. All right. I think Rocher is going to got some questions about your early life.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you, Bruce, once again. So I got a lot of questions about your early life because it's an interesting background that you have. At the end of the day, a lot of experience with different sports like cricket, baseball, and football. So what eventually drew you towards football in the end?
Well, I didn't have an option really. My father was a goalkeeper in football. He was also a catcher in baseball. So when I was playing baseball, I was a pitcher. So I used to pitch to him. But football was the one that I was drawn to. I played all the sports in Africa, including rugby, but at the age of 14, I signed my first contract, a retainer. I got money for the retainer.
Right.
And in the contract, it said you cannot play any contact sports, which is rugby. So rugby went out the window. And then cricket and baseball was now going to be coming contact sports, and that went fell by the wayside as well. So football was the one that I stuck to.
Right.
Although later I got a scholarship from Boston University with Boston Red Sox as a pitcher, and it was after I came out of the army, and I thought, I've played football, I'm going to stick with football. That's where I stayed.
Something you and Fidel Castro have in common, I guess.
Thank you.
So how did your experience, you spent 2 years in the army, did you think that helped your development or, kept you back a little bit in terms of having continuity?
It made me grow up a lot quicker than I, that any of my age these days, because it's 17 to 19, you're going in the war and you see some of your buddies getting shot and it makes you grow up. When you come out of the army, you don't want it anymore, and you just make sure that you're going to stay alive. And that's exactly what I did. I went to South Africa. The South African government called me up because I was in the army in Rhodesia, and I didn't want that, so I went to England, and I had a trial in England and ended up in Vancouver. Vancouver Whitecaps gave me my first real professional contract.
And how do you feel about the level of soccer at the time that you were transitioning over into the Vancouver Whitecaps from South Africa?
Well, from South Africa to jump to that level, it was quite a huge level, because if you have a look at who I played with the likes of Alan Ball, Alan Hinton, Roger Kenyon, Trevor Wymock, and we played against Pele, Kubilius, Johan Cruyff, Chinaglia, Naiskins. So we played against very, very high level players. George Best, if you want, Rodney Marsh. So the level was that great. And I played my first year with Vancouver Whitecaps. I only played 3 or 4 games. And at the end of that year, the manager said to me, I'm going to send you to the strongest league in the UK. So immediately I think, Liverpool, Manchester City, maybe Arsenal. Yeah. No, Crewe Alexander.
Not what you were hoping.
Yeah, 92nd in the Football League. Everybody's on top of them. That's why they're the strongest.
Right.
And you just won the championship in North America as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
He said, I want to see how you fare in the UK. So I went there to Crewe. Played 24 games for Crewe. Manchester City watched me 20 times. 20 Liverpool times. Watched me play once in a warm up, and then they signed me 6 weeks later.
Man City don't really know anything about youth development, do they?
It's a loaded question.
They had Carl Valentine.
Did you immediately start in the lineup once you got to Liverpool? Were you a contender?
No, when I signed at on the 16th of March 1981, it was getting to the end of the season, so it was in the latter part of the season. I played 3 games for the reserves, and all my games were away from home. And Steve Grizovic, who was there, he was there for about 5 years, he played all the home games. And he didn't like it because he wanted to play every game.
Of course
I would as well.
Mm-hmm.
But Bob Paisley said, no, you play. And then at the end of the season, I went on holiday and I found out that Ray Clemens had gone to Tottenham. So I came back and there was still Steve Grizovic and myself. And Steve Grizovic wasn't very happy. All the preseason tour games I was playing.
Right.
So we went back to Anfield, and just a week before our first game, he says to the manager, excuse me, boss, I would like to see you. He says, okay, come on. So as soon as he says, come on, you know that they're going to walk down the corridor
right.
and go into the office, and there's going to be 16 other players going listening by the door. So he goes and says, yeah, sit down. He says, what do you want? He said, listen, boss, I've been here 5 years and I've played 8, 10, 12 games for the first team. And you know, and I'm very upset that I'm not playing any of the preseason games. I need to play every single weekend. He says, yes, you will be playing every single weekend because now I've just swapped you for Bob Wardle at Shrewsbury Town. Take your bags, boss.
That was the last walk down that corridor, right?
That was his last walk back out of the corridor, picked right. up his gear and went.
Right.
I said, cheers, Steve. He said, well, bugger off.
He ended up doing okay, though.
No, he did. Yeah. He ended up playing cricket for Shropshire. There you go.
And this manager you speak of was the famous Joe Fagan?
No, Bob Paisley.
Bob Paisley.
Bob Paisley, yes.
So you managed to play under Paisley?
Oh. Paisley, Fagan, Kenny Dalglish, Graham Souness, Roy Evans. I got rid of more managers than goalkeepers, second team goalkeepers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did they ever blame you for their exits? Or?
I didn't mind getting rid of one of them. That was Souness, but never mind. Because he was the best player I've ever played with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bar none. He had everything.
He was that good, eh?
Oh, he was that.
You liked him better than Dalglish?
Well, you see, the thing is, Dalglish can only play in certain positions. Mm. With Souness, he could play fullback, centre half, anywhere in the midfield, and a striker because he was that way adapted. Thank goodness he was too shorty, otherwise he'd be playing goal as well. But he was just magnificent. But that's where you leave him, on the football field, because as a manager, he was a terrible.
Mm.
Yeah,
we heard similar things in his more recent stint as well.
But if you have a look at him now, if you listen to Souness as a pundit, he is the best pundit you'll ever want to listen to because he nails it every single time. Right.
More so than Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher, you see.
I'll go with the more experienced person, and that's Souness. I'll still say that he's the best pundit there. And if he was ever offered to go and manage a team now, he'd probably be the best manager you'd ever want to work with. But I think from transition from coming too early off the football field into management made him that way and aggressive.
Right.
You know, since he's triple bypass, I think he's mellowed down a bit. And that'll be good for him.
Probably by orders.
Yes.
Yeah. So you touched on arriving at Crewe, but you also showed up at West Brom for a bit. We heard that Ron Atkinson rang you out of the blue. Is that true?
Yes. That was when I was in South Africa, and the South African government sent me a call-up paper saying that I'd be going into the South African army in 6 months' time. So I left there probably in 6 weeks. 6 weeks after I got that, I was out of there, West Bromwich Albion. Ron Atkinson wanted to sign me, but they couldn't. Because I couldn't get a work permit in England.
Mm-hmm.
I was on a South African passport. Rhodesian passport in those days wasn't worth a carrot. So the South African passport, they didn't want to give anybody in South Africa a work permit.
How did you, the way that you got the work permit in the end was interesting though. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I ended up playing for, coming to Vancouver, and they sent me to Crewe. And I got there at Crewe in October, and by the time, still same passport, work permit problems. December, I rang my mother and I said, listen, they want to know if I've got any, you know, grandparents that are born on British soil.
Mm-hmm.
So my mother said, we'll try this one. So he, I said, okay. I listened very carefully and took all the notes. And she said, your great-grandfather was in the Royal Fusiliers during the Boer War.
Mm.
They were stationed at the Cape Town Fort, now called the Castle. And in 1903, your grandfather was born in the castle. That should be technically a mm-hmm. British stronghold right. during the Boer War. So I took all this information to Croydon, gave them all the information, who my great grandfather was, the names and everything. My grandfather, yes. Come back 4 hours later, where's the South African passport? Boom, stamped it, ancestral visa.
Fantastic.
And that's how I got a work permit.
People should try that.
but if I'd known that a year earlier, then I would never have got to Liverpool.
Yeah, right.
I would have been playing for West Bromwich Albion.
Wouldn't have been so bad, would it?
At that time, no.
At that time, no.
At that time, no, because they had a great team.
And under Big Ron, too.
Would
have been fun, no?
What? The Incredible Hulk. Yeah.
But, right, so you ended up at Liverpool, and you touched on the fact that you replaced Ray Clements in the team. Did that, I mean, the step up from Vancouver to Liverpool was one thing. Replacing a legend like Clements must have added an extra ton of pressure on the job.
No, I thought it was fun. But the first 6 months, we weren't gelling because the back four were... They knew Ray Clements, knew what he could do,
mm-hmm.
when he was coming, when he was not, when he was, you know, and he marshaled the defense. When they got me, you know, maybe I wanted to do things too early, you know, stamp my authority too early, and, I did. I messed about, swung on the crossbars a couple of times and walked on my hand, and, you know, all the coaches on the bench. What are you doing? And they came to the crunch on Boxing Day, 81. We played Manchester City. We got beat 3-1 at home. One and two of the goals, probably my fault. And after the game, I got the hook finger. Bob Paisley, he says, yeah, when you see you. Walk down that corridor.
Down the corridor.
You know that 16 other guys are going to come and listen by the door. He says,
yeah.
Well, how do you think you've played? I said, well, yeah, I think I might have, you know, I could play better. He says, yeah, you better play better, otherwise you'll find yourself back at Crewe. And that was it. And we ended up winning the league by 3 points with a game to spare
mm-hmm.
at the end of that season from 13th, and 13 points behind the league. Leaders.
Right.
We ended up winning with a game to spare. And that was a lesson that will always stick with me. That go do your basics, do the job, don't mess about.
They always say that when a player's struggling, they always say just go back to the basics, and get back up to where you want to be, and then do your thing.
Absolutely, 100%.
Yeah.
And you'll find that players do that.
They do.
If you have a look at Mignolet,
mm-hmm.
he was very, very scared to come anywhere out of his area.
Yeah.
Well, he's gone back to basics. In the training sessions, he's come out mm-hmm. bang, coming mm-hmm. crossing, and that's alleviated all that fear.
Right.
And so he's come out of his shell. He's playing a much better game.
Yeah, I could also see. I mean, his kicking wasn't very good at the start, and then I think you could see he also went back to the basics with that. Stopped trying the fancy passing out to defense, and just said, "Let me just kick it as hard as I can, and then
just get it upfield. Exactly. You can deal with it."
Yeah.
You know, he's not the best of kickers anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and for him, he should actually learn to at training.
Mm-hmm.
Bang, get the people to back pass and get someone to follow and
right.
chase him down. Get his feet moving and have a look at passes. You know, it's all going down back to basics.
Yeah.
Well, he mentioned, I think, recently earlier in the season doing a lot of overthinking in those kind of situations. Is that a problem that regular fans
go 100%. I was overthinking in my first 6 months. That's why I got myself into trouble and then,
Speaking of goalkeepers winning over a new back four, I was reading Sir Alex Ferguson's book last year, and he mentioned that when Peter Schmeichel would come out and shout at Bruce and Pallister, Bruce would turn around and say, "Get back in your goal, you big German tart," or something like that.
Yeah.
Did your back four ever have any of those kind of nicknames for you?
Yes.
He's wondering if he can say it.
No, they used to say to me, I didn't need to look at them, and they didn't have to say anything because Alan Hansen wouldn't speak to you.
Right.
And if he doesn't speak to you, then, you know, he's really cheesed off, or he's, mm-hmm. you know, he's angry at you. And that's the way they were.
Yeah.
Phil Thompson used to, you know, have a go, and then Souness also as well. But later in, you know, when I'd learnt my lesson, then everything was okay. But if they don't speak to you in the training,
that's how you know.
They're angry with you.
Young fans now will probably know Hansen and Lawrenson as pundits. And they come in for some stick to do with that. But in their prime, what made them so good?
Were they so good? And what made them so good?
In their job as a centre-half.
Yeah.
Hansen was just like, he could read the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And before the player had actually passed the ball, he's two steps across. He wasn't the quickest of players, but he could read the game exceptionally well.
Mm-hmm.
Lawrenson, on the other hand, used to have to cover for Hansen when he made a mistake, because Lawrenson was very, very quick. Also read the game very, very well.
Would you say that's the best kind of centre-back pairing, a very athletic centre-back and a very kind of positional tactical centre-back?
It goes to show that it should be.
Right.
If you've got one that's not as quick but can read the game, you need someone that's
cover.
That can cover,
mm-hmm.
always. And we always had that. You know, Gillespie came in for Hansen and... he came in for Lawrenson.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had other centre-halves with Torben Picnic. He should have stayed in the forest on a picnic mat.
So he was out to lunch a few times.
Glenn Hussein was not a bad player.
In 1984, you won the European Cup, mm-hmm. beating Roma on penalties. We'll get to the penalties in a second. But I'm interested to know how different the European Cup as a competition was to the Champions League that we see now.
Well, that was very easy to answer, because we had knockout from round one.
Mm-hmm.
So my first 2 years in the European Cup, we got knocked out probably the second round in the first year, and the third round in the second year. And it was both my mistakes. Keeper, drop goal, Sofia. And then the other one, keeper, I've missed it. It's at Lautz, Poland.
Right.
So those are the two teams that beat us in our first 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then came the time when we were on a run, and we got through to the final.
Twice in a row,
yeah. Well, we were defending champions, so yeah. We went there as defending champions. And in those days, the defending champions didn't play the qualifiers. They just went straight to the final.
So, in the penalty shootout against Roma, your knee-crossing dancing is legendary, obviously. We asked people for their input on what they wanted us to ask you. And one of the questions, as to be expected, I would imagine, is where did that come from?
Where did that come from? Yeah, you say, where did it come from? Well, I can tell you categorically, I don't know. we just got around the huddle, and the manager was, Joe Fagan, was going through who's going to be taking the penalties. So he went through and said, Phil Neal first, and Stevie Nichols second, Souness you take third, and Rushy you take fourth. And Dalglish, you take fifth. And Dalglish said, excuse me, boss, you substituted me 86 minutes. So he took out another cigarette. He didn't know that he had another one lit. So two there. And he's trying to determine who came on for him. And he looked over there. There's Michael Robinson, got cramp. Yeah, he's looking around. And he's looking around for the a fifth penalty taker. In the end, he's gone through the team, and there's myself and Alan Kennedy putting our hand up. So he looked at myself, looks at Alan Kennedy, says, "Bruce, you take the fifth." So I was going to take the fifth.
Right.
And that's how it would happen. And when Stevie Nicol went up and tried, you know, for the first penalty, all the coaches in the, "Hey, boss, look at you. What's he doing? It should be Phil Neal. Let's run with it."
All right? The planning out the window.
Bang. He hits them over the top of the ball. Now I'm going to go to the goal. I get this arm around me. And it's Joe Fagan, and he says, "Listen, young man," he says, "myself and the coaches, chairman and the management and the directors, the wives and the girlfriends, and your teammates, and also the 7,000 fans,
no pressure,
are not going to blame you." Oh, so now I'm... I heard not. Fine. So I've got this big chest that I'm not going to be blamed at all, because if we're not going to blame you, because if they can't hit the target from 12 yards, it's not our fault. Mm-hmm. And so I walked away, and he said, "But try and put them off." Now that stuck in my head, mm-hmm. Try and put them off. So the first penalty I was wondering what he meant, and the ball went straight down the middle. Phil Neal gets up and puts the next one in. Bruno Conti comes up and picks up the ball, and he's dancing, he's skipping, you know, mm-hmm. to the, and I looked at him and I went, put my hands on my knees and I crossed them over like a 60s style dance. He stepped back, he looked at me, and I did it again, and then, and then he looked at me and then went, "Okay, fine, we're gonna ready to take the penalty." Boof, and he hit the ball over the bar.
Perfect.
And I went, it might work.
You're onto something.
A little light bulb just.
Well, the next penalty they took, we scored 2-1 to us. Then they got 2-2. The Rigoletti scored. Rushi scored. And then Graziani steps up and he got the ball under his arm, and he's walking, and he's got his arm around the referee, and I didn't like it, so I went and bit the net. I went to the other side, bit that. And then the paparazzi is going crazy, and what's this nutter doing? And then I went out of the goal, and I saw Graziani leave him alone, put the ball down, cross himself, and I ran down drunkard, you know, like wobbly.
Yeah.
And I gave him, and I thought, I've just been biting a net. It looks like spaghetti. Excuse me, it looks like spaghetti. So I give him a wobbly legs. And then I wobbled again. And he crossed himself, I wobbled again. And he ran up, and I knew where he was going to put the ball, because I was watching them take penalties for 2 days.
Right.
And it was down to the right. So I went early. And he's looked at me go, and he's tried to change his mind, and he's scuffed it and went over the ball. So I'm running around the field, forgetting that I had to take the fifth penalty. Alan Kennedy puts the ball down and goes, "Boof, thank you very much indeed." And that was it.
That moment when you're, I don't know, but I would imagine, does it feel like an eternity from the time the player puts the ball down to when he's going to take the penalty?
Yes, it does. It's like all the fans, you know, they watch it and they go, "God, just kick the ball already."
Right.
And it's like that. It's like you, everything slows down by slow motion.
Right, like a factor of 10. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Right.
Ooh. Right. And that's how it was.
And when you said you anticipated where he would put the ball, is that something most keepers do, or is it you wait for, what do you prefer?
If you get the information where they put the ball, then you can make a determination where you're going. And I watched the two penalty takers.
Right.
Rigoletti, for instance, their third, I couldn't get into the goal quick enough, because I was watching him and Graziani after training, mm-hmm. taking penalties, mm-hmm. in the same corner. They never deviated. They went same corner. And when I went in that goal, I took off, poof.
Right. Early.
I looked over and went in the other side. Right. But I realized I was watching them take the penalty from the other side of the stadium.
Or through a mirror.
Yeah, you know, if you're on the other... Oh, shh.
Do you agree with people that say a well-struck penalty is unsavable? If you take a good penalty, it's going in?
Yeah. There's no chance a goalkeeper is going to stop anything.
Right.
If you hit the ball perfect and with a little pace... The goalkeeper's
low into the corner.
So the keeper's job
the corner,
is
corner, right in the top of corner. Right. There's no way that he's.
So keeper's job is to save the ones that aren't hit perfectly.
Yes,
and put them up with spaghetti legs.
Or do what you can within the law.
Right.
So did Jersey Dudek owes you one.
Yeah, I was going
to. No, he didn't. Jersey Dudek did everything within the law of what he did was his style.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no copyright infringement or anything.
Carragher said to Jersey Dudek, Jersey. Do a Brucey. And he looked at Carragher and says, who's Brucey?
I'd imagine.
And then he said, no, Grobbler. Oh, Grobbler. And that's what swung him to do what he did. He was like a starfish in a golf, starfish in an aerobics class. You know?
Yeah.
He was magnificent.
That's brilliant. I want to talk to you a little bit about Liverpool now, and the starfish. What was that? A starfish in an
aerobics
class. And just these lines. I want to touch again. I know we've talked about Mignolet already, but we didn't mention exactly the line that you said in November, which was brilliant. It was worse than Dracula at dealing with crosses, and I just thought that was regardless of the content, a brilliant sentence.
Actually, they asked me, "What do you think of Mignolet?" His performance, and I said, no, he's worse than Dracula. At least Dracula comes out of his coffin once in a while.
Wow, that's...
And that is the exact words I used. And I have been called into the office, you know, and I asked why I said it. And I've said to them, if you're happy with him, then you can continue.
Right.
But if you're not happy with him, tell him what he's not doing right.
Yeah, Rogers
was
not happy.
And what he's not doing right is coming out and commanding his area.
Mm-hmm.
He has never done that, and until he does that, I will continue to criticize.
Right.
Because if you have a look at all the goalkeepers that Liverpool have had, right from Tommy Lawrence, we all owned our box.
Mm-hmm.
We all owned our box. Even the ones that came after me, we owned our box.
Right.
Nobody could tell us what to do in our area. Not even no coach can tell us what we could do in our area, unless that coach was a goalkeeper.
Right.
So until he does that, I will continue to criticize him. And thankfully now, I don't criticize him anymore.
Right. It's only when required. No. I mean, Brendan Rodgers was not happy with it, but at the same time, he did drop him for a period of time, and that kind of justifies it a bit.
I think that it did,
yeah.
But then they put in the Australian boy, Brad Jones, and Brad Jones came off the field with a dubious injury.
Yeah.
And I don't think that Brad Jones is going to last long at Liverpool.
No. So do you think with... Sorry, Ashley.
No, go ahead.
Do you think with Mignolet now in this form and maybe in the next few years, if he... improves or at least stays at this level, do you think Liverpool need a new keeper, or they're okay with him for now?
They're going to have to get another goalkeeper because Brad Jones is not going to be there.
A first team keeper.
Whether they get a first team goalkeeper or someone to replace Mignolet,
they
still need a keeper.
Right.
And I'd go for the top one that they can.
Okay.
That's your player currently.
If they want Marcel Dabelis to go over there on a trial, Mignolet better watch out.
Mm. All right.
Sorry, I just want to ask on the goalkeepers commanding their box. You always hear the pundits and commentators saying that back in the day, you know, goalkeepers like you, when the ball's in the air, you come out, if you have to punch it, you're going to punch your own man, and if you have to get that ball out. You think that goalkeepers now, is it the way that they're coached, or is it more they're, you know, afraid of the contact? Because now they're protected by referees a lot, right?
You just hit the nail on the head. They're protected by referees, and nowadays it should inline goalkeepers to come out more often to come and grab all the ball. The risk is less. Yes.
Correct.
So unless they are properly taught, which I don't think that they have been, and they have to look at the letter of the law when they're in the air, and if they get a nudge, they're going to get the foul.
Right.
So why not come out? You've got your arms and everything. So
In terms of that, the keepers that dominate their area, I mean, who's up there for you right now? We've got Lloris, we've got Neuer. Who's up there for you?
Neuer, Lloris,
De Gea,
very, very good goalkeeper.
Courtois.
Well, Courtois, yes. In the EPL, yes. And then you've got Buffon.
Of course.
He's still playing at his age and just a magnificent.
What's your view on Casillas and kind of what's he been going through recently?
Casillas is, he should never have been in the Spanish squad since 2010.
Right.
I think Pepe Reina is a better goalkeeper, mm-hmm. even today. But Casillas has been very, very lucky. He plays for a very good team, and his wife is the media person at Real Madrid.
It does seem like it got to a stage where he was slightly bigger than the club. I mean, even when his replacements were playing extremely well, they got dropped or sold or...
Yeah, Diego Lopez.
Of course.
Okay, moving away from the goalkeepers a bit, just looking at Liverpool in general. So Brendan Rodgers is a bit... I mean, people aren't exactly sure about him yet. Some think that he's very talented, he's a very good coach. Some think he's young, and he's made to look better by his players. Like Suarez, for example, people would say would have carried the team last year when defensively they weren't very good, which is more of a coach's responsibility. What do you think about Rodgers? Do you think... I mean, he has this big, long-term plan. Do you think it will come to fruition?
I think that, once he gets rid of the players that weren't his, that'll be Gerrard and the likes of Johnson and Skrtel, mm-hmm. then all the players will be his, and then he'll be able to build. I don't know if that's his philosophy, but it seems to be looking like that. I think that his philosophy is very good. I'll back him all the way because I think he's a dynamic coach, and he knows what he's about. Where I questioned it last season, we came second and we let in 52 goals.
Yep.
And no team should ever come second letting in 52 goals. Now he gets rid of a striker and Suarez, who scored you something like 30 goals. We'll take the 30 goals off the total that we had, which was about 90. So you take that 36 off there.
A third.
We've only got a goal difference of plus 10, mm-hmm. 11, mm-hmm. which would never have got us in that position. You needed to address the back first, which was your centre half and your goalkeeper.
Right.
And looks like he's learnt because he's playing three at the back.
He is.
And I said that last season, if he plays three at the back, he'd let less goals in because you'd have the wing-backs tucking in, mm-hmm. and you'd have five at the back, which is happening now.
So you like his 5-3-2?
Yes, I do. Yep. His is a 3-2, whatever it is.
Right.
3-2-3-2.
Right. As long as you have 11 on the field.
Yeah. But also the way he's managed to convert what would be wingers into wing-backs, like
yes.
Markovic and
wing-backs, yes.
Yeah. Emre Can is a midfielder who's playing at centre-back right now, for example.
I would keep Emre Can at the centre-back because
he's looking very good.
He's an excellent player. And
comfortable on the ball
22.
As well.
Mm-hmm. And progression will be, when he gets a good centre-half, is to put Emre Can in the midfield,
mm-hmm.
and
right.
then we will be able to go forward.
Mm-hmm. So sticking to managers, I mean, we've seen Shankly, Paisley, Fagan, Dalglish. Since then, I mean, we've seen Souness, Benitez, Hudson, Rodgers. What do you think from that Dalglish era to now in terms of the choices Liverpool as a club have made in appointing their managers?
I think that they've been very good up until Roy Hodgson.
Mm-hmm.
I think Roy Hodgson was out of his depth.
Right.
It's okay for him to have the national squad, is because he's got the best England players available. Now, for him to come to Liverpool, I think that the players were bigger than he thought that he could handle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he did okay here, but I wouldn't say it was the best. Benitez, for me, was one of the best managers we've ever had.
You'd put him up there, definitely.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And if there was a chance of him coming back, I'd give him a chance because I think he still loves the place. And he actually, his philosophy was the catalyst of the whole thing turning around.
Right.
And us winning. He was the last winning manager that we've had in the Europe. Mm-hmm. So give him another chance.
Would you say, I mean, the reasons you gave for Hudson's, let's call it failure, let's say, would that be kind of mirrored with Moyes, for example, at United? The players were, the club and the players were a bit bigger than the stature of the manager when he came in.
Roy Hodgson is a manager in his own, you know, level.
Right.
And he was up there with Benitez.
Mm.
But his the style and the philosophy of his coaching is not the same as Benitez. And that's why if you lose the players, then you're doomed.
Mm-hmm.
You need the players in the palm of your hand. Benitez had them. Hodgson, he didn't really have them there.
Yeah.
They were going, what's this training about? And, and people, players talk. So his coaching and his coaching methods of training was archaic.
Right.
Archive.
To be fair, Benitez had a very strong squad as well. Mascherano, Alonso, Gerrard, that is a brilliant.
Torres, when he was firing as well.
Absolutely.
Carragher, he had a very strong squad.
But the players want a dynamic training, not a laboured 1966 style.
So Paul Konchesky wouldn't have been your first signing?
Well, he's playing very well for Leicester.
Yeah, he's doing okay.
You've said before that you think Liverpool may be in disarray when Steven Gerrard leaves. You just pointed out previously that you think when all the players that aren't Brendan Rodgers is leaving, you mentioned Gerrard as one of them, you think he'd be better off. So has that your opinion changed a bit on how Gerrard leaving would affect Liverpool?
I've always said that you needed a scouser at Liverpool, and if we've got one. We've got Lambert back. He's a scouser, but he's not a true scouser.
Right.
You want someone that's got Liverpool in his blood, which Carragher and Gerrard did have.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did we have any scousers in the side when I played? No, not really, because we had Rushy, who was from Flint. He was a plastic scouser. did we have anybody else, a true scouser, since the likes of Tommy Smith and Phil Thompson?
Mm-hmm.
You know, no, we didn't.
Right.
So we've had one or two. One time we didn't even have any mm-hmm. scousers in the side. We didn't even have any English players playing in the side with Dalglish.
Right.
So it was everybody else.
So just touching on that, how do you feel about Henderson being made vice captain, potential full-time captain?
He's captain now.
Brendan Rodgers said he might not be captain next season, but I doubt it, to be honest.
You have a look at the squad that they've got, and who is he going to give it to?
Right.
The
only Skrtel, really.
A game changer. Skrtel, maybe not, because Skrtel might go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's one of them that wasn't his signing.
Right.
Yeah. So he might go. And if you have a look at those squad, who is he going to give it to? Who can he give it to?
It's not much.
A game changer. You know, maybe Mignolet.
Sturridge,
perhaps.
Sturridge. But, we rarely give, at Liverpool, we rarely give a striker the armband. Mm-hmm. It's always a midfielder or centre half. At Liverpool, we don't give goalkeepers. We never have.
Right.
I think Pepe Reina was the only one that really ran out with the armband a couple of times. Yeah.
You mentioned quickly Brendan Rodgers and getting rid of the old old players that were not his signings. He's done some good work in the transfer market, I feel. But if he gets people like Sacco, Lovren, Kolo Touré, doesn't matter, really. Because at least at the back, I feel his signings haven't been that great. And that doesn't really inspire too much confidence.
Well, I disagree with you. I think that Sacco is going to be one of the best players. And I've said it from the start. Because any striker that comes there and looks at it, I've got to play against this guy. My goodness gracious, you know you're up for a... a strong, hard, hard afternoon.
Right.
If Lovren can get that little bite in him, yes, he could become one of, you know, a very, very good player. You know, I feel that at the back he's done pretty good.
Mm.
Yes, is it Mourinho? Was it Manquillo?
Manquillo.
Yeah, he's one that can grow.
Right.
Moreno's
playing great.
Markovic.
Mm-hmm.
Markovic, he's going to grow. You know, it's going to take time for the Serbian to.
There's a lot of young players.
They're very young players. Jordan Ibe, for instance. Have a look at this guy.
Yeah, he's great.
You know, he is a very, very good player. Very talented. I think that we're going in the right direction.
I got a last few couple of quick fire questions from Bernie goes on to questions from the fans. Really quickly, Liverpool in the top four end of the season?
Yes.
Four or third?
I could get third.
Yeah?
Yes.
Confident about that?
I'm confident we'll get in the top four for sure.
$30?
$30?
$30 bet.
$30 bet. I'll take you on for
it. He means it.
FA Cup winners?
Hopefully.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Better in the Champions League next season?
We have to be.
I mean, it's really the only option.
No, we'll have to be better in the Champions League next season.
Mm-hmm. Here's a quick question. I always argue with the guys that I feel Brendan Rodgers is not the best at balancing Europe and the local competitions. I feel last season he did okay because he didn't have that pressure on him, and this season it's showing a bit in trying to deal with that extra added weight of responsibility.
I think that his tactics there in the last round against Besiktas wasn't the best.
Mm-hmm.
We showed that when we're on the front foot, we can cause problems and we can make sure that we can edge out a game. Have a look at today's game.
Brilliant.
You know, front foot, go at them. When they go 2-1 up, they still went at them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's what I've been told. If you're on your front foot, the best form of defence is attack.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, today the Liverpool got the second goal and Sturridge came on.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was a very, very brave, good substitution.
Mm-hmm.
Because it made the other team think, oh, he's not putting on a defender, they're going to go for more.
Mm-hmm.
So it put it in their mind. In Besiktas, they played two strikers up front.
Yep.
Now, they never have done that. Why did they do it?
Mm-hmm.
Why did?
Maybe they had City on the weekend in mind. Tactical experiments.
Not the
maybe
time,
the Europa League isn't so prestigious in terms
Europa
of competitions.
League, if you win that competition, you're in the European Cup.
No, you are.
I mean, the English teams have all really crashed out this weekend of Europe. It's pretty sad, to be honest.
It is.
Yeah.
Perhaps
it is.
Making the top four in the league is a much easier goal for Liverpool.
We get the revenue right the way through.
Yeah.
You've seen the 5 billion TV deal signed recently.
And so when you talk about the manager building a base, how do you see Liverpool progressing in the next couple of years? Maybe winning the league.
We all hope that and pray that Liverpool, any Liverpool fan will want us to win the league. It's a long time coming.
Yeah.
Last time was when I played in 1990, and so I think I must get that witch doctor that I brought to take the spell away.
You think it's going to take anything special for that to happen, or is it just keep doing the basics?
I believe that he's on the right direction. His players are now responding. He's Mignolet at the back has been fantastic since the turn of this year. The three at the back that they've played, the only one that I would question at the moment is Lovren. But if we can get Calatore fit, then I think that we're in the right direction.
He's got to stop getting malaria, that guy.
Well, malaria is a recurring.
Yeah.
And if he goes back to Africa that often, you're going to get malaria.
Yeah, it seems to flare up a lot.
Yeah, just got the...
I know about that.
so do I.
Yeah.
Before we get to fan questions, I want to ask you about the famous boot room concept when, Liverpool had those four famous managers back-to-back in their heyday when they were winning the Champions League 4 seasons out of 8 or 7. What happened after that? What happened to the boot room concept? Where does it lie today?
Well, Mr. Souness came in and he changed everything, and he took the boot room out, and it's now the media room. That's where, if you go as a podcast and you get your media badge at Anfield, you'll go into that area, which was the boot room. And so for me, if there is another boot room as soon as you come in for off the bus, but that's not the boot room. If I was a manager at Liverpool, I'd change the whole thing around. I'd put the boot room back where it was, and I'd put the media room where the new boot room is, and let them go outside. Because I think that the press people there have got too much run.
A lot of power now. You're right.
Well, I'll ask you some questions from the fans, because we got a lot of excitement about you. I'm sure that's of no surprise. But firstly, I know you have a witch doctor, but I'm Nigerian, so I got a witch doctor. And as I didn't want to tell you this, but as a United fan, I'm going to let them know that to counter your guys so you never win the league again.
Depends which tribe your witch doctor comes from, you see, and the bloodline.
This is true.
That's it.
Yeah. Our Nigerian ones are pretty potent.
I know. Don't worry about that. Might never win in Nigeria. Never win in Cameroon.
No. Ghana either. You want West Africa, just stay away from
that. Yeah, exactly.
So David Rudin, at David Rudin on Twitter, he wants us to ask you about your time on British Hell's Kitchen.
And he says you were great.
Yeah.
Well, I had a great time. It was a great experience. And I'm the only one that has never been fired by any big chef.
Mm-hmm. Well, you left on your own, right?
Yes.
Okay. Make your own rules. That's the way to
do it. My wife, my fiance at the time, now my wife, she needed me more than the other people need. You know, I didn't need the accolade of going try and win the thing more than the others needed it more than I did. And my wife, she whispered something in my ear, and I decided that was it. I'm out of
happy it. Wife, happy life.
Yeah.
Did you bring anything that you learned there into the kitchen at home and whip up
I still can whip up a mean meal.
what's your signature dish?
No, I can cook anything.
Okay.
Listen, for my friend there, I'll cook him some samp.
I'm sure.
Samp and beans.
I don't know. We might have to go to a restaurant. I don't know if I eat anything.
No, don't worry about that. And we can grill some meat, because they know about grilling meat.
Yeah, we do. At Darren Spherical says, after Anfield Rap took the music world by storm, why didn't you capitalize with a pro music career?
Well, that was a very easy way to answer. The producer of that, can I say the composer of that single?
Yeah.
Paid the players £150 each, except Mark Lawrence and myself, because we wanted royalties and the cut of what was going to come. And to this day, Craig Johnson has not paid us a penny. That's why we don't go into singing it anymore.
That makes sense. You're missing out on your royalties.
I'm still waiting for my royalties, Craig Johnson. Are you listening to me?
So at Paul Beege, great name, do you remember that mascot that you sat and had dinner with before the 92 UEFA Cup quarterfinal with Genoa?
It would have been a kid.
Genoa.
1992.
UEFA Cup quarterfinal against Genoa. Yes, we did play in Genoa. My goodness.
Apparently had dinner with a mascot.
I did.
Long time ago now.
Yeah. He just wanted to see if you remember.
No.
I wonder if he's that mascot.
I mean, the question is, do you remember?
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's him.
That's the mascot.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much indeed. I do recall having a dinner, but if it is you, I hope you've grown up to be a stand-up person.
Michael Tomlinson wants us to ask you about that beef you had with Steve McManaman.
Ah, Steve McManaman, yes. Actually, in that game, I wasn't really after him. I was after the person that turned his back. when Mike Ward hit the ball, and it was Mark Walters who turned his back on the ball, and I was after him. And it's something triggered in my head, don't go after him and hit him, because otherwise the papers are going to say I'm a racist. So I'm ding and McManaman. And I just turned on Macca. That's where the...
After we were like, just don't worry about it, man.
No. Afterwards, I had a boot thrown at me from the manager.
Oh, my
boot
God.
Hit the wall.
Another corridor walk, perhaps?
Yeah.
No. This is in Everton's dressing room.
Yeah.
I was at the far side, and all of a sudden, I see this boot coming at me.
There's a lot of boot throwing in dressing rooms.
And
Scottish managers.
Yeah. All the Scots. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you say to him, I saved you newspaper Dalglish, headlines?
Dalglish said, don't ever do that again. So that's it. I said, well, where is he then? He's in the bath. So I tried to drown him. We all mates still.
Sandy Davis, so he's one of our good friends, and he's biggest Liverpool fan I know. He asks, what was your favorite moment as a Liverpool? Well, this is a two-part question. Firstly, what's your favorite moment as a Liverpool player? And growing up, which player did you admire?
I'll go to the growing up, which player did I admire? That's my father. He was a goalkeeper. But then when, in 1962, when Rhodesia got televisions, we could see some soccer games, and it used to be Russian, for some unknown reason, Russian and BBC, and the other channel was the Russian TV, and they had a goalkeeper called Lev Yashin. I thought he was fantastic. And so those are the two.
Is he the greatest?
He was the greatest. But you know, goalkeeping has evolved and everything, and so he's up there with one of the greatest ever.
You?
No, not myself. I've never been to a World Cup, so I cannot be called world class.
That's still how you assess it, yes. Like how people do it right now. You got to be at a World Cup or win a World
Cup.
You got
to be at the World Cup, and then you're world class. If you don't at the World Cup, you might be a very good goalkeeper.
Mm-hmm. So even goalkeepers that play in the, for example, a Champions League final, but doesn't come from a country that can qualify or get very far in a World Cup, no chance.
And the second part of your question,
Your favorite moment as
my favorite. There's multiple at Liverpool. Signing for Liverpool was a great one, and saving my first penalty was another one at Manchester United. Sorry, Mr. Frank Stapleton.
don't hurt my soul just a little bit.
And I only picked that up on the day of the game, because I was reading their program, and it gave a sequence of, oh, that's Frank Stapleton. And there's the next picture. Oh, it gives them a secret. Which side did he put it in? Okay, thank you very much.
They gave away the secret? Oh,
correct.
My God.
I went out and I went, boom, saved it. Don't put it in the program.
I think, Rashid, there's a question from Alistair from Facebook.
Yep. Indeed. He wants to know, I think we might have touched about this earlier, but specifically your time in Durban City and comparing that with the standard of football in, you know, South Africa, Zimbabwe, North America altogether. He says he grew up in Durban but didn't go to games regularly, so he missed seeing you there. But he wants you to just sort of go over that.
Yeah, Durban City was a good team. My debut for Durban City, we had two goalkeepers that played in the English Premier League.
Really? Well.
And the goalkeeper my debut for Durban City was against Wits University. And in goal for Wits University was the one, Gary Bailey.
Gary Bailey?
Yeah.
Of Manchester United.
Yes. Huh. And my debut there, we lost 2-1.
The rivalry started.
The rivalry started before then, because I was told by Gary Bailey's father that I'd never be a goalkeeper as long as I've got a hole in my behind.
Oh, so wow. That's interesting. So at that time that you were coming up, there were two, you know, established goalkeepers of the two leading teams in England at the time, Bailey and yourself, from the same region.
From South Africa. Mm-hmm. Gary was from Johannesburg, and I went back down to my birth place, Durban. And in that game against Wits, the headlines, and I'll tell you the headlines, was in the newspaper. Bruce boobs as Schumann shoots home the winner.
Very nice.
So, and the boob was, I had a player on this side of me, so I couldn't kick with my right foot. I drop kicked the ball like this, and from the center circle, someone half volleyed it into the back of the net.
That's your mistake.
Yeah, because I was out of my, you know, area on the left hand side.
Right. Yeah.
Doom and like.
Do you remember every goal almost you can see?
Yes, sometimes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes.
Yeah. Just to stay on your time in that region, your first club was Highlanders?
No, my first club was Salisbury Kellys.
Okay. But when you signed for Highlanders, I've heard they offered you a very interesting signing bonus.
Yes.
Can you tell us what that was?
One cow, one 10 sheep, 2 goats. Yeah.
No, I would have won with 3 goats at least.
Oh. Yeah, and they asked me if I wanted them live or taken to the abattoir. So I said, the goats, give me the goats live, and the rest you can slaughter and give me the meat. So my mother was very happy. We got a year's supply of meat.
Yeah,
and we were okay. The goats, I gave we had a garden boy and a house boy. We gave one goat each.
Nice. Very final question. Can you do a Scouse accent? And if you can, will you do it for us?
All right, lad, lads. Thanks for giving us this opportunity to talk with you. We had a great win today, didn't we, lads? Yeah. And the Manx, well, we won't talk about them. We shall... Let us go now because we're at the end of our Kosh. What is it? Kosh?
Under the Kosh.
Podcast.
We're under the Kosh, lads. And if you go back to Liverpool, just give them all the very best. Cheers.
Thank you, Bruce. And to say thank you, we have the hooded sweatshirt for you.
There we go.
Yeah.
We hope you actually said that.
Yeah, we hope you weren't misquoted.
I apologize for laughing at life and enjoying my football. That's fantastic, guys. That, have you read that? Don't worry about that. That's a beauty.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Really appreciate it. Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Yes.
Thank you for downloading the KoshCast. Get in touch at underthekoshblog@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at under_thekosh. And for articles, predictions, and the full experience, go to underthekoshblog.com.
Coming back with a black hoodie. Pasopio.